Good evening to you, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm John Pierce, your host. My guest this evening is Glenn Cransley, journalist who is going to tell us about the history of Northampton County since the 1950s. He's written a book called Still Changing, Still Home. And I know, Glenn, that the book is available at the Siegel Museum bookstore. In fact, it has a prominent place there. And it could be elsewhere also.
You can get it at the Moravian bookstore. And it's soon going to be available at the Barnes & Nobles here in Northampton County area, the one at the Promenade Shops and the one up Route 33 as well.
You're covering the bases. This is the book title again, Still Changing, Still Home. And it was published in 2017. Glenn Cransley worked on daily newspapers in the Lehigh Valley for 41 years at the former Bethlehem Globe Times and then at the Morning Call in Allentown, where he served as editor of the opinion pages and as a vice president. Glenn graduated from Penn State University, majored in journalism, and then set out here in the Lehigh Valley for his career. He has more than 25 years of experience teaching all phases of journalism courses at Lehigh University, Penn State, Lehigh Valley, Muhlenberg College, Cedar Crest College, and Moravian College. So, Glenn, you've been a professor as well as a writer. How did you get started with the teaching?
Lehigh has been a leader for a long time in science journalism. And when I was working as a reporter at the Globe Times, I focused in those early years on the environment and science. In the era of the first Earth Day, that was important for us. But there was a professor at Lehigh at the time, Sharon Friedman, who ran the science writing program, and she asked me to get involved, and that's how it started.
So it started at Lehigh and grew from there. Now, one of the quotes that I like from Glenn Cransley is his view that newspapers are the first draft of history. It says it was gratifying and an honor to write another draft in his book. Newspapers as the first draft of history, meaning that it's going to change as more people come along and try to recreate that same history that you wrote in your book.
Yes, and since that first draft is, as far as daily newspapers go, is written under time pressure. You're writing against a daily deadline. I had a boss who called newspapers the art of the possible, which meant you do the best you can with the time you have. In researching this book, as I went back and read the stories that we wrote in those days, including some with my byline on them, I saw a new perspective, and the stories mean a little bit different things than they did to us back then.
Can you say that you enjoy the day-to-day writing for a newspaper more than writing a book, or vice versa?
Newspapers were much more fun. you had the camaraderie. You sat elbow to elbow with other reporters. You had editors stalking around the room or looming over your desk, urging you to get done.
Well, that doesn't sound like fun.
But it was. It was, I think good reporters have to have a bit of an ego. You have to have the confidence to tell the story, to gather your information and then tell the story the way you saw it. So we believed that we were extremely well qualified to tell the stories that we were observing and writing about.
Now, you started off with your journalism career at the Bethlehem Globe Times, correct?
Yes. Actually, I did two summer internships while I was still going to Penn State. The first year that I did the internship, I wrote obituaries. That's all I did all summer. And that was valuable because I learned the importance of being accurate. Obituaries are the one thing in the paper that somebody is going to clip out and stick in the family Bible or save it in some way, even if they're just printing it off a web page these days. So you had to get those you had to get every detail in those obituaries right. And I had a kind of a scary experience. There was a fellow named Mike Cunningham, who was much older, and he worked as a copy editor. And I had written an obituary, and Mike called me over to the copy desk. And in the obituary, I said this person was going to be buried in Misty Hill Cemetery. And Mike called me over and said, "Where's Misty Hill Cemetery?" And I said, "Well, I guess it's in Bethlehem." And he said, "Well, I never heard of it. Call the funeral director back." And when I did, I realized that I misheard the director, and it was Nisky Hill, N-I-S-K-Y, over on Church Street. So Mike scared the heck out of me, but I learned to be accurate.
And when you told him that that was the answer, then your editor realized, he knew that.
Of course he knew.
Okay. Yeah. Did you think he knew that when he told you to call the funeral director?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a dirty trick. You were a young reporter at the time.
Yeah.
Well, you
first
were doing
year,
the
first.
Was that your summer?
The very first
internship?
Summer.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How about baptism by fire? Talk to us a little bit about the days at the Bethlehem Globe Times, which doesn't exist anymore as a newspaper.
That's right. The publisher of the Globe Times for many years was Roland Adams, who had the foresight to hire as his editor a guy named John Strohmeyer, who had been working in Providence, Rhode Island as a crime reporter. He was writing about organized crime. And Strohmeyer had grown up in the Nazareth area, so he was happy to come back to the Lehigh Valley. And he was my mentor. He's the best journalism teacher I ever had. And Strohmeyer, one of the things he said to us just about every day was to beat the morning call. The morning call is a much bigger paper, and our challenge was to get stories that they didn't have or discover details that they didn't have. And it was an evening paper, which meant you had to be done writing around noon. And that building, most of the building still sits there, right outside your offices here. There was a press room right attached to the building.
This is South Bethlehem.
South Bethlehem, 4th and Broadhead, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess there's a dance studio in the building now. But when the presses started running, the whole building vibrated. And to this day, John, that gives me a kind of a chill to remember that feeling that I'd written these stories and now the presses were running and soon the stories would be trucked around the city and around the Lehigh Valley.
And that kind of vibration no longer exists in any newspaper, I'm guessing.
No. You know, just to fast forward, the Easton Express, that's one of the dailies we still have, is printed at in a plant in Staten Island.
Yes, it's called the Express Times now.
Yeah. And the Morning Call shut down its press room earlier this year, so they're now printed in Newark, New Jersey.
Wow. Changes. Glenn Cransley is my guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. He's a journalist of many years, in fact, 41 years, at two of our prominent newspapers here in the Lehigh Valley. And he's written a book called Still Changing, Still Home, Northampton County Since the 1950s. So, Glenn, you have a great interest in history, or you wouldn't have written this book.
True.
Why did you decide to start in the 1950s?
Well, Northampton County had a history written in 1953 by a fellow named Gordon Aldurfer. And in 2010, Gerald Seifried, who was former county executive, serving on county council, asked county council to consider funding a project that would bring Northampton County's history up to date. So county council went to the Northampton County Historical Society, and the Historical Society hired me to do the research and writing. And my perspective starting out was that Altdorfer's book really was written at the close of World War II. He didn't write much about the 50s at all. And I had seen, and anybody who lived here has seen, so many changes since then. If you read the 1953 book, you weren't getting a picture of what Northampton County is today. So that was my objective, to look at things from the 1950s and follow some of the important themes up to the present day.
Now, you interviewed more than 90 people who observed or played roles in the history of Northampton County since the 50s and drew from public records and contemporary journalism to tell the story of the sweeping changes that have occurred here. And our particularly older listeners will tip their hats to you here on the sweeping changes, because they've seen so many of them in Northampton County, and you tell it very well in your book. By the way, the book is 350 pages. It has 9 chapters, and it covers all aspects that you could imagine that would have happened in Northampton County since the 1950s. It's published by the Northampton County Historical and Genealogical Society in Easton. Glenn is a native of Allentown, now a resident of Hellertown, and has lived in Northampton County since 1970. That's the year that I moved to the Lehigh Valley, to Allentown, 1970. And you have been married for 45 years.
That's right.
And let's give a shout out to your wife.
Her name is Susan, Coopersburg girl. She grew up in Coopersburg.
Does she have anything to do with journalism professionally?
No, she was an artist. She was a art teacher for many years.
All right. And you have 2 children.
2 daughters, young women who have their own careers. My older daughter, Emily, is a psychologist in Montgomery County. And my younger daughter, Molly, is Emily. Works in healthcare at Phoebe Ministries in Allentown.
So they're both in the helping professions. The book that you have written, Still Changing, Still Home, is known as an official history of Northampton County. Why is that? What role did county government play in the project?
Well, that's the connection, that this was funded by county government. They allocated money for the research and writing, and then also for the production of the book. And with that, I felt a great responsibility to get the story right, to get everything right. And to help me do that, Historical Society enlisted Dr. Linda Heindel as the chair of a committee to oversee the production and the writing. And then she organized a committee of professors from Lehigh, Moravian, Northampton, and Lafayette, who reviewed everything I wrote chapter by chapter. They had to approve the chapter before I went on. So it was I was glad to have them looking over my shoulders.
Now, the book was published in 2017. When did you first write that first sentence of the book?
Well, I got started in 2011, so I'm guessing it was around 2011. And it took a good 6 years.
And it is chock full of information. Let's go to a quote from the book. This is the book, Still Changing, Still Home. And chapter 3 is called Getting Here, Getting Around. And here's what Glenn Cransley says about Route 22. There has long been a U.S. Route 22, but in Easton, Bethlehem, and Allentown, it followed city streets. Travelers along Route 22 up to the mid-1950s could count 31 traffic lights between Easton and Allentown. You have to be kidding. Did you actually count the traffic lights?
Somebody did. Somebody from the highway department.
A reputable source, right?
Yeah.
In Bethlehem, it followed Union Boulevard and the sweeping curves familiar to people who drive in West Bethlehem today, yes, were frustrating and dangerous. One of the region's most renowned citizens, General Harry Clay Trexler, died of injuries he received on William Penn Highway segment of Route 22 just west of Easton in 1933. And so I didn't realize that Route 22 was once what we now know as William Penn Highway, a section of it.
That's right. And there were places between here and Harrisburg where it was known as William Penn Highway, and that one remains. And if you can picture going west from Bethlehem on Route 22, you would have been following Union Boulevard and Tillman Street.
Yes. That's what I heard, is that before the Route 22 we know today was installed in the 60s, that Tillman Street in Allentown carried trucks going from New York City to Pittsburgh and back.
Exactly.
And unbelievable.
And there was a real division of opinion among merchants who had businesses along Tillman Street or Union Boulevard on whether a superhighway, which is Route 22 was the first in the Lehigh Valley, was a good idea. On the one hand, they knew that the busy road was bringing people to their businesses. On the other hand, there was a lot of traffic, particularly the trucks that you just mentioned. So it was always noisy, and it was always dirty.
An editorial writer for the Allentown Morning Call, and I'm quoting from Glenn Cransley's book, wrote that the Lehigh Valley section of Route 22 was the worst stretch of highway in the state, saying that its curves and two-lane width were responsible for great personal and property damage. Among the nicknames the newspaper reported were Suicide Highway and Old Cowpath. That's a neat quote. But what a difference we have in our roads if you go back to the 1950s and what we have today in the Lehigh Valley. My guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse is journalist Glenn Cransley, whose book, Still Changing, Still Home, Northampton County Since the 1950s, talks mostly about Northampton County, but also, of course, includes comments about the whole Lehigh Valley, and particularly Lehigh County, because you can't consider one county without the other. I'm John Pierce. Glad to have you along this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Our engineer this evening is Neil Heaver, who is our director of operations here at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. It's time for us to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to learn more about changes that have happened in Northampton County and the Lehigh Valley. So stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar, every Thursday from 7 to 9, here on WDIY.
So we've talked about transportation in the sense of automobiles, and that's the main, well, through the years, Glenn, it's become more and more the automobile that's taken over. We used to have more public transportation in 1950 than we do today. So let's talk a little bit about that. What happened along the way as far as automobiles taking over for trains and buses and trolleys and whatnot?
Well, after World War II, ownership of automobiles was just starting to grow. There were many, many families that didn't own an automobile because they lived close enough to where they worked or where they shopped, where they went to the doctor, where they went to work. But that began to change. And one of the things that affected the growth of that industry was the building of highways like Route 22. And it was a pet project of President Dwight Eisenhower. And Eisenhower believed that the United States needed these highways for defense purposes. There was a real fear that the United States could be attacked by nuclear weapons in the 1950s. And Eisenhower believed that we needed a system to move people out of cities in case such a thing would happen. But I think the real effect of the highways is that they opened people's imaginations, that they could get into their new car and go and easily be hundreds of miles away within a day's drive. So the Lehigh Valley was pulled along that trend with the opening of Route 22, first of all. In succeeding decades, we built other superhighways. We built in Bethlehem what's known as the Spur Route, which connects the Hill-to-Hill Bridge to Route 22. And then we built I-78, which was a major drawn-out debate. I-78 was, it took 26 years to build I-78 from when it was first proposed. And
stretching from where to where?
From the, well, it continues to the east, but let's say it enters Pennsylvania in Easton and crosses Northampton County through the Saucon Valley and then bends north through Lehigh County to join the old Route 22 corridor near Fogelsville.
And it took 26 years for all
yes,
that to happen.
And it was, and that was the spirit to debate stems from the fact that this was happening in the early 1970s. The first Earth Day was observed in 1970, and people were very conscious of what modern activities were doing to the environment. So there were groups and municipalities in the Lehigh Valley that were worried about the impact of a new superhighway.
Now, Route 22 has never been I-22, correct?
Correct.
So it's not the same superhighway that I-78 is?
Correct.
Okay.
It's a state highway, yeah.
But at the time that Route 22 came in, well before I-78, it was the big east-west route in the Lehigh Valley.
Yes. And as it's been modernized, you know, in more recent years, there was a group of it was called the Route 22 Coalition, who advocated for improving the exit and entrance ramps and so on. And they referred to Route 22 as the Lehigh Valley's main street. Because of the heavy traffic that it carries, it always has carried the most traffic of any of the highways in the region.
So that's the development of sort of away from public transportation and more into private transportation, meaning automobiles. And, of course, that's something that happens all over the country in the 50s and 60s. I remember my father making a comment, being amazed that we drove from the Chicago area to Virginia without hitting a traffic light. Now, I'm talking about 1960, roughly. And my father, growing up in the 20s and 30s, it was a big deal to him. Again, from Glenn Cransley's book called Still Changing, Still Home. At least one avid trains. Let's talk about trains, which we used to have in the Lehigh Valley, and I think, unfortunately, no longer do. You say that a 1989 morning call report on prospects for restoring passenger rail service concluded that the trains were perceived as being dirty, outdated, and unreliable.
That's That's certainly true. And there's an anecdote in the book where for many, many years, a gentleman by the name of Michael Kaiser was the director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. And Mr. Kaiser, when he looked at rail service to the Lehigh Valley, believed that it was not economically feasible to continue passenger rail. So apparently he was at a cocktail party in Allentown one time and made a bet. He bet another gentleman that he could ride his bicycle from Bethlehem to Allentown faster than the old diesel passenger train could get from Bethlehem to Allentown. So sure enough, and Mr. Kaiser was an avid bicyclist. So he went down to the canal towpath there by the old railroad station, and he took off toward Allentown, and the train left at the same time. And waiting at the station there at the foot of Hamilton Street in Allentown, sure enough, the train got there a minute or two ahead of Mr. Kaiser. But when he rolled in, he said, "I had to stop and fix a flat." Now, I told this story to someone else just recently, and they said, "But you know, the train had to stop because in those days there was a division over who operates which rails. So the train man had to get off the train, throw a switch to move the tracks, get on, pull through the switch, get off, close the switch again, and continue." So his point was that it was an even up race.
It was a tie. Well, again, from Glenn Cransley's book, "At least one avid train passenger does not remember the trains as being dirty, outdated, and reliable. William Hubbard III of Bethlehem, a longtime employee in the Bethlehem Steel Corporation credit department, had a lifelong love of train travel. He was active in the National Association of Railroad Passengers and its Pennsylvania affiliate." I never knew there was an Association of Railroad Passengers. "And served on the board of LANTA, the Regional Transportation Agency. In the 1970s, he advocated without success for extending that service to Allentown, where it might attract enough riders to make it financially viable. Hubbard was aboard the train's last trip to Philadelphia on June 30, 1981. He knew that the car would have to deadhead, be empty, back to Bethlehem because that's where the diesel repair shops were. In a 2011 interview, he recalled how he had arranged to ride in that empty train car. Imagine being such an avid supporter of trains. It must have been a very sad day for him. And he said, "It was a beautiful, moonlit summer night. I looked out the window and watched the scenery. It was idyllic, but sad, too, because I knew I was watching history turn a most unfortunate page." The end of rail service in the Lehigh Valley. Any thoughts on your part that we could still be having talks about rail, perhaps light rail in the Lehigh Valley in the future?
It would take a big public investment, and I don't know if there's much appetite for that kind of a government investment these days. Well, we hear talk about investing in infrastructure, but to me it's a long shot. You know, another change, John, is mass transit in the Lehigh Valley, particularly buses. Up until the early 1970s, there was a private company, Lehigh Valley Transit, which operated the intercity buses in the Lehigh Valley. And it was going broke, and it notified the state that it was going to shut down operations. And that spurred officials in Lehigh and Northampton County to get together and create a public transportation authority. The reason, now in my interviews, the reason they said that they did that is that there was a real need from the biggest employers in the Lehigh Valley. They wanted their employees to be able to hop on a bus and get to work. So they convinced Lehigh and Northampton County to form this regional transportation authority. You can count on three fingers of one hand, John. You can count the number of times that regional efforts have succeeded in the Lehigh Valley. One is Atlanta, the bus service. Another is the Planning Commission, which serves both counties. And a third would be the authority that operates Lehigh Valley International Airport.
So it's tough to get the two counties together on projects, but those are three huge ones that you cite there.
Yes. Yeah.
Glenn, the title of your book, I really like this title, Still Changing, Still Home. Why did you choose that particular title? And were you the one who came up with it?
I was having coffee with a friend, a professor at Penn State Lehigh Valley. Her name is Nicola Gutgold. And she asked me what the title of my book was. And I said, well, I don't know. and she challenged me to think of something. And this is what I came up. And I chose this because it looks both forward and back. One of the things that committee from the Historical Society challenged me to do was to identify a character of Northampton County. They said, well, we know what Lancaster County is. We know what Philadelphia is. We know what Allegheny County is. But what's the character of Northampton County? So we're a county that makes things. It's a manufacturing county, or at least it used to be. And we still make things, but they are very different things. Your listeners, John, can't see the book, but on the cover there's a picture of a farm in the northern part of the county with the Kittatinny Ridge in the background, and it could be a picture postcard. It's a beautiful scene. So that is home. That is still home, and that we hope will be there for a long, long time. And the other image on the cover of the book is a young woman who is a technician working in one of the companies at the Ben Franklin Technology Center right here on top of South Mountain. So our economy is still changing. And that young woman and people who work in industries like the one that employs her, they are making things that no one could conceive of in the 1950s. They are employed in nanotechnology, silicon technology. They are employed in medical breakthroughs that were unknown just 5 years ago. And one of the enticing things, as we take this title and try to look into the future, one of the enticing things is, what will our children and grandchildren be making in Northampton County? What are the things that we can't conceive of today that will be commonplace in just their workaday worlds?
Right. The young woman on the cover is looking into a microscope. We can't tell if it's medical research, could be, or what exactly. But anyway, it's something that we're not able to conceive of in the 1950s, as you say. What change or trends would you say have been the most sweeping in this 70-year period that you're covering?
There's three that stand out. The one we were just talking about, this change in manufacturing. In the 1950s, about 60% of the jobs in the county were in manufacturing, and 40 were in government service and retail. Today, that's flipped. The minority of jobs are now in manufacturing, even though the manufacturing is some very high-tech stuff. Healthcare is now the leading employer in the Lehigh Valley. So that is a big change that we're living with. The next big change is in government. We have governments today that we still like to complain about them, and they're not perfect, but they are much more open and responsive to the public than they used to be. That is owing to a law that Pennsylvania passed in 1972, which allowed counties to write their own charters, to make their own form of government. And that was how Northampton County did with the old-fashioned party boss, backroom dealing way of conducting county government. We can talk a little bit more about how that happened. It's an interesting story. But essentially, it made government more open. It made government more responsive to people.
And the change from the old way of the backroom bargains did not come about until 1972.
Correct. So there were three charters written in that era. The Northampton County did its charter, Bethlehem did a new charter, and Easton did a new charter. And all what they had in common was that they made government more open and reduced the influence of insiders.
So we have the change in from manufacturing to services, basically, healthcare being a big employer today, the biggest, you say. And we have governmental changes. And what was the third?
The third is that we've changed. In the 1950s, almost everybody in Northampton County was white. And you went to a Catholic church, you went to a Jewish synagogue, or you went to a Protestant church. And these were folks who came here at the very beginning from the British Isles and from Germany, or they were German-speaking. And as we got into the 1950s, at the end of World War II, there was a migration of people from Puerto Rico coming to Bethlehem, and they have their role in the economy and public life and education has evolved over the years, but they're now a major piece of the demographics of Northampton County. We have I mentioned where you might worship, and that has changed because now we have religions that have their roots in Asia or in Iran, and they are growing. They're growing fast in Northampton County.
Interesting. Yes, when I was a child, and we're talking the 1950s, the question would be, which church do you attend? That's no longer a question. Now the question is, are you a practicing Roman Catholic or Jew or Protestant?
That's certainly true. You know, what they call the mainline churches have had a hard time maintaining their membership roles. You could call them Pentecostal churches have been much more successful. Now there is a Baptist church in Easton. It's called Shiloh, and it's a black congregation. And they are a success story unto themselves. They have grown and grown and grown. They have protected and shined a light on the culture of black people. They've created missions that serve people around the world. And it's a Baptist church, and it's a real success.
It's a huge church, yes, indeed. It's time for us to take another break here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thanks so much for joining us here on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm John Pierce. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
My guest this evening, Glenn Cransley, has written the book, Still Changing, Still Home, Northampton County since the 1950s. We were talking a minute ago about the Shiloh Church in South Easton, which has had so much success. Glenn, What surprised you most as you did your research for this book?
Well, it has to do with how we get along with each other in Northampton County, and particularly how whites and blacks got along, although certainly relations with Hispanics is part of the story too. And you know, when I was starting out as a reporter in the 1970s, there were two stories in the newspapers that were stories of conflict. And in another place, other cities in the country, they might have turned out to lead to rioting and worse. But here they didn't. So the first one I wanted to mention was in 1970, right down the street from where we are right now, John. There was a place in Bethlehem. It was a youth center called Protection Firehouse. It was a former firehouse. And one night, some guys from Allentown, young men from Allentown, drove by and fired pistols out of their car and shot and killed a young lady named Rose Marie Parham, a black girl. And they wounded a young teenager by the name of Garcia. So there was a Hispanic kid there, too. And it was, it turned out that the shooters in the car also were black. But what happened was Bethlehem, the police department, and the mayor decided that the way to respond to this was to clamp down with law enforcement on the south side. And, you know, I mentioned that I was just a young reporter. And if we left your offices here and walked about 200 yards up the street, we would come to an old Baptist church. And I remember standing in the back of that church. There was a minister by the name of Jerry Hargrove. And Jerry Hargrove was at the front, and the church was packed, and it was a hot summer day. And he was just pleading with the people in the church, stay calm. You will not honor Rose Marie if you respond with violence. At the same time, the newspaper I worked for, our editor John Strohmeyer, was running editorials saying pretty much the same thing. You know, we will get through this together. We do not need to turn on each other. Shortly after that happened, the police, in doing their enforcement in South Bethlehem, also right up the street here, was a place called the Ale House. It was a bar, a very popular bar. And one night, there was a fight that spilled out onto the sidewalk, and the police came and just swept the sidewalks. Everyone who was outside got arrested and was taken to City Hall. In the middle of this, there was a young patrolman by the name of John Stein. Stein walked up to the mayor, took off his gun belt, handed him his gun and his badge, and walked away. He quit. He quit on the spot because he believed that the police department was not being fair in how it treated people in South Bethlehem, particularly how it was treating non-whites. Shortly after he left the police force, Stein wrote two articles that were published in the Globe Times, and they were published on the front page, and they laid out an insider's view of how the police department had two standards for law enforcement, one for the black kids and one for the white kids. I'll never forget that. You know, Strohmeyer won the Pulitzer Prize that year, and the Pulitzer jurors cited his editorials that called for the city to be calm in giving him the award. The other incident happened in Easton, and this was in 1973. The Easton police were chasing a guy on the south side. His name was, he was Victor. He was known as Vicky Strickland. And they chased Vicky across the railroad tracks and shot him as he was running. The police claimed that Strickland, Vicky, that he had a gun, but you know, we've heard this story before. There was no gun. And the police were disciplined because they had to, because they had changed their reports. They changed their story of what happened. Less than a month later, again, the police were at a home on the south side looking to arrest someone. And it was another black man. This was within 3 weeks of each other. Now, this guy, it was a different situation. He came out of the building with a gun, and the police had shotguns, and they opened fire, and he was killed. After this, again, we had leaders in the community pleading for peace. And today, to this day, there's an organization based in Easton called Project, P-R-O-J-E-C-T. And the letters in that name, P is for Protestant, J is for Jewish, C, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, C for Catholic. And leaders from those three faiths organized Project to, first of all, keep the peace, and then to provide community services, food bank, education, and so on. So we have these two examples of whereas elsewhere in the United States, there were race riots and deaths and fires and all kinds of trouble, the Lehigh Valley stayed calm.
That's also a great example of neighbors getting together to do something from a grassroots level that doesn't depend on the government, the organization Project that you mentioned in Easton. One of the other big changes that we've seen in the past 70 years is we mentioned before, manufacturing emphasis going more to service. And it seems to me that in Northampton County, the big example of manufacturing being reduced so greatly is Bethlehem Steel. As I drive to the studios here in South Bethlehem, and I cross the Mincy Trail Bridge and look to my right and see the steel stacks, which now are dormant, I try to imagine what life was like when they were working, when the men were in there and they're doing their shifts, and then the houses up on the hill where they would live. This is what Glenn Cransley says in his book, Still Changing, Still Home. Workers there faced hot and dirty conditions, but were proud of what they did. Union members and green hats, or supervisors, had a record of solving problems without filing grievances and docking pay, and the plant had a spirit of camaraderie. Workers kept flower and vegetable beds outside the welfare rooms. An annual calendar bearing pictures of Coke workers was a well-received holiday gift. At Christmas, workers erected a lighted star 40 feet across on the tall Battery A coal silo, which was visible over a wide area. The star was last illuminated in March of 1998, when the last push of coke was made. Since the coke works closed, hundreds of former workers and their families have gathered for summer reunion picnics. We're talking 20 years ago that it closed. Each year, the names of workers who died are read and a moment of silence is observed. It's almost a church service. And that's Bethlehem Steel, which in 2001 entered Chapter 11 bankruptcy. What a great upheaval for Northampton County.
We're old enough to remember, John, when the steel was in full swing. But the rule of thumb was afternoon shift time, 3 o'clock to 3:30. You tried not to be out and about because the traffic was so heavy of people leaving the plant, and beyond the plant level, you know, the white collar and the managers and executives played a major role in all phases of life in the Lehigh Valley. They served on public boards. They were leaders in education. They were leaders in their faith communities. So Bethlehem Steel was such a dominant influence. It was by far the biggest employer for all those years.
Let's go to another quote from Glenn Cransley's book. I like your zeroing in on this imagine sentence, Glenn. Imagine a pair of grandparents, let's say from Palmer Township, planning a weekend of activities with their grandchildren in 2013. They think back to their own childhoods in the 50s and 60s and are amazed by the choices available to families that did not exist in Northampton County when they were growing up. They can watch concerts, dance performances, and other entertainment in theaters and other venues built in the last 50 years. And I'm going to add to that, they can listen to WDIY, which is public radio in the Lehigh Valley right nowadays, ever since 1995. That was not in your book, but I had to put it in. For sports fans, many of the long-standing traditions they love are enhanced by new venues and teams. And when it comes time for worship and other religious experiences, an array of new options is available, from the newly popular non-traditional denominations for Christians to the temples and shrines that adherents of Eastern and Middle Eastern religions are happy to open to all. How much things have changed since the 1950s leads them to ask a question. When these grandchildren have grandchildren of their own, what will life be like in Northampton County? Indeed. So difficult when we think back what we couldn't imagine in the 1950s and what we are unable to imagine going forward as well. Glenn, you did about 95% personal interviews for the book. Which ones stand out?
The first one I'll mention is William Moran, who the last position he held, he was president judge of Northampton Counties. But in the 1970s, when he was a young lawyer just starting out, he was the chairman of the government study commission that led to Bethlehem's new charter. And the reason he was asked to do that is that his father's name was also William, and William Moran Sr. was director of the District 9 United Steelworkers of America. So every steelworker in Bethlehem knew the name Moran, so that he was going to have good entree to their support. And when I talked to Mr. Moran, his understanding of how government has changed in the Lehigh Valley was encyclopedic, and I learned quite a lot from him. The next person I'll mention is Shelley Brown, who's the director of the State Theater in Easton. And Miss Brown started out in public broadcasting. She was at the television station.
Channel 39.
Channel 39, and went to the State Theater in 1991 and kind of rescued it. There was a committee of citizens who had been raising money to preserve the theater and prevent it from being torn down. And Miss Brown really understands how the public has a role in culture, in presenting culture and preserving culture. And her my interview with her was just excellent because she understands how we fit together. She made an important point. You know, when we were debating whether to have slot machines in Pennsylvania and whether there should be a casino in Bethlehem, people raised concerns about the casinos attracting crime, and people raised concerns about traffic and problems for the police. But nobody looked at their effect on the existing nonprofit entertainment and culture venues. And it's been a struggle for places like the state theater. I also want to mention Alan Jennings. Alan has been the director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley for many years. And Alan is the guy who worries about poor people. And his agency runs all kinds of programs that reach out to folks who just need a hand up. And again, Alan's perspective is how public programs are the role that they play in the Lehigh Valley and how we depend on them. So talking to Alan and getting him to reflect on his years of experience was terrific.
Definitely movers and shakers in the Lehigh Valley, all three of those people. We've been talking this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse about a new book that has come out, written by Glenn Cransley, and it's called Still Changing, Still Home. Glenn, what's next for you? Do you have any other projects in the works at this point?
I've just started to poke around at this idea. My great-grandfather, William Cransley, was the fire chief of Allentown from 1911 to 1927. To this day, he's the longest-serving fire chief in the city of Allentown. And his son, my grandfather, who was known as Honey Cransley, was a firefighter for 35 years as well, rose to the rank of captain. So I had the idea, it was my wife's, Susan, it was her suggestion actually, why not write something about the Allentown Fire Department? So I don't know exactly where that research is leading. I don't know if it's going to be just a history book. Would it be about my ancestors? Would it be a historical novel? I haven't figured that out yet.
Historical novel. Intriguing. So Glenn Cransley has had a career in journalism and is now writing books. Let me get you to quote Glenn, if you would, from chapter 9 in this book called Still Changing, Still Home. And the chapter's title is Looking to a Hard-to-See Future.
This book has traced the remarkable and transformative changes that Northampton County has seen since the 1950s. Physically, thousands of acres of post-World War II farmland and open spaces have become highways, homes, and businesses. The county's economy has shifted from being focused on manufacturing, especially heavy industry, to a service economy whose jobs are in healthcare, retail, and financial services. The institutions of higher learning have expanded, and an entirely new school, Northampton Community College, sits on former cornfields in the Green Pond area. And the people of Northampton County have changed. More of them are non-white, more of them have Spanish as their first language, and more find their spiritual lives not in traditional Jewish and Christian communities, but in mosques and temples that serve other religions.
Still Changing, Still Home. It's a book about 350 pages long. If you want to know about Northampton County and more widely the Lehigh Valley since the 1950s, this is the book for you. Written by Glenn Cransley and published by the Northampton County Historical and Genealogical Society. He has chapters, 9 chapters, the first centuries, farms and the rest of the land, getting here, getting around, making more perfect governments, schools to make the county better, a new economy, who we are, where we are, how we live, environment, religion, culture, sports, and finally, looking to a hard-to-see future. Glenn, good luck with the book, and you are on the speaker's circuit also. You've been at Siegel Museum, where I met you, and you are going to be there again, I heard the other day.
Going to be there again in mid-April. The next one coming up is at the Easton Public Library, and that will be April 17.
My guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, Glenn Cransley. Thanks so much for coming by, and this is your debut here at WDIY. May it not be the last.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, John.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce. Thanks to our engineer, Neil Heaver, who is Director of Operations here at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.